Good morning and welcome to Getting Down to Brass Tacks, the Sunday edition. Brought to you as usual, as customary, with the kind compliments and supports of Williams Industries Incorporated. Today, we have, as usual, our contact numbers are 434-1790, and we can also be reached by WhatsApp at 266-4862. Today, we're going to be having a special guest, and also it'll be a kind of special arrangements because we have joint moderators today. On the panel will be my David Ellis, and I'm Glenn Murray, the other moderator. And our special guest will be Bishop Joseph Athley, the leader of the opposition. We'll get back and we'll be seeking basically to examine his tenure in office in that position since the 1st of June, 2018. We'll do so after the messages from Williams Industries Incorporated.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipe, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing materials. For building supplies, big or small, at Williams
Metals we have it all. At Williams Metals we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
I'm sure, David, I'm speaking on behalf, or your behalf, when I say thank you, Bishop Athley, for living your religion and rendering to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God, because you'd very willingly give your Sunday church service, which you normally conduct, to be part of this discussion. I want to welcome you and thank you for your cooperation. I'm not sure that with David's involvement, whether you're going to have double trouble or double delight, but I want to welcome you nevertheless. And if you might want to respond to that, Bishop Athley.
Thank you very much, Dr. Glenn. Thank you, Mr. Ellis, David, for having me on the program this morning. I hope I can make it worth your while and make it worth the while of the listeners across Barbados and beyond. I need to correct you just a bit. I did not entirely give up my service this morning. I attended the worship part of the service, and I spared the congregation my preaching. So someone else is doing the preaching this morning. But thank you for having me.
Thank you, David.
Yes, well, good morning, Bishop Joseph Athley, and good morning to you, Glenn. And I suppose there's a lot of interest in what has happened over the last 2 years or so since 2018. We all know the background where Bishop Athley ran on a BLP ticket and found himself in a situation where the Barbados Labour Party won all 30 of the seats. And when we thought that the Prime Minister was making a move to find an accommodation for the Democratic Labour Party, then Bishop Athley revealed that he had an interest in making the transition from being a member of the ruling party to moving to become the opposition leader in Parliament and subsequently forming his own party. I think many people are interested in getting an assessment of how he has seen his own performance over this period and perhaps to respond to how others have seen him perform as well.
If I can pick up from where David left off, Bishop Athley, can I call you Mr. Leader then to make it easier, leader of the opposition, in this role you're really here today. How would you respond to that? Because your shock development was second only to the shock 30 seats won by the Barbados Labour Party. So you were the target of all kinds of accusations. One, that you did it for money, that you did it through political opportunism. You did it because you were angry at the Prime Minister for not having included you in her cabinet, having been a parliamentary secretary and a cabinet minister yourself. Could you give us the insight into what really motivated you to take such a move?
Thank you for the question, Glenn. If I may specifically speak to it, let me clear up one or two misperceptions, misconceptions, myths. And let me first say, this was not a plan concocted between Miss Motley and myself. I think there was some currency being given to that view early in the exercise, but I think by now people would have disabused their minds of that. There's no concocted plan between Miss Motley and myself. Certainly, there was also a view that my move was instigated by former Prime Minister Owen Arthur, And I would like to think also that subsequent events would have disproved and exploded that myth. For me, it is not money, Blaine. Anybody who knows Joseph Fadley will tell you that it can't be, money can't be the principal motivator. I've never been principally motivated by materialist ambitions or by money itself. If you know me, I have lived a life which is about a history of service to the people of Barbados, some localized communities through the church, across the region as well. I've served the church. But to me, it is about public service. My move to cross the floor, and in fact, technically speaking, I did not cross the floor because I made the move before the parliament sat, before that floor was established. But it was about, for me, the institutional integrity of the Parliament of Barbados. I was spoken to immediately after my announced victory at St. Michael West in the St. Leonard's School by a media person who asked about the seeming outcome. At that time, people were saying that it looks as though the Barbados Party was going to win all of the seats. And what implications would that have for the people of Barbados? And that my response then was, I think if it did turn out to be true that we got all 30 seats that night, I didn't think the people of Barbados had anything to fear from the government. The people I knew over on the what is now the other side for me were people of integrity, people who most of them are obviously led with a passion for serving the public. And I didn't think that you would see the pursuit of power to such an extent derailed that it became an abuse of power, an abuse of the system. I didn't foresee that. And I'm not saying here today that I do foresee it now. I'm simply saying my view then was that there was nothing to fear because of the numbers at the 30s. But I felt that the democracy of Barbados, as we practiced it up to then, required that there be a physical presence in the opposition benches. The integrity of the parliamentary system, the functional capacity of the parliamentary mechanisms. For example, the Public Accounts Committee functions under the chairmanship leadership of the leader of the opposition. I would have had, as leader of the opposition, the opportunity to appoint two persons to the Senate, I realize. And that would have given me the privilege of appointing two persons whom I felt could carry the banner for the alternative view, the alternative opinion in Barbados. Caswell Franklin has been doing a tremendous job. Senator Franklin has been very effective. Senator Crystal Drakes, who I think is the most brilliant of all the senators in the upper house. So I felt that we could have two people there who, were the need to arise, could help to properly, more fully scrutinize legislation and, if necessarily, block it. For me, it was about providing partly parliamentary embodiment for the alternative opinion in Barbados so that not only a single view would have been heard. And that's the type of thing that motivated Joe Vladley, certainly not money if you know him. And I can speak to that further if you want.
Well, money.
Go ahead, David.
Money is not the only thing that motivates people. Prestige, power, and all these other factors play a role. In all of this, though, there are those who look at what you've done and they say, look at the ease with which politicians can change their mouths. They have called you a Judas and a traitor to the Barbados Labour Party cause. How do you respond to that?
I don't see myself as a Judas. I certainly have not changed my mouth. When I departed from the bosom of the Barbados Labour Party, when I made this move, it was not out of any sense of being at odds with the policy position then of the Barbados Labour Party. It was not out of a sense of being at odds with the principles, the leadership of the Barbados Labour Party. As I said, it was in the pursuit of the preservation, the furtherance of democracy in Barbados. I have not changed my mouth. And at the end of the day, David, though you be loyal to an organization, though especially a political organization, though you be loyal to a party, there is a higher sense of calling, a higher level of loyalty, and that is the people of Barbados. My move was to simply see how best I could position myself to pursue the interests of the people of Barbados, not necessarily to pull down the Barbados Labour Party.
Mr. Bathurst, you mention has been made of money as having been one possible motivator in your case. You've denied it, but you, in very general terms. But I know, can you give some specific details? Like, for example, some of your supporters say that you do not take, I've never taken a salary from the church you serve. And apart from that, can you tell us what you would have made as a minister, now as leader of the opposition, or as an MP, so that we can get an idea that as to the sums involved, to give people specifics that they can see what possible motivation it might have been where money is concerned.
These things are public. These things constitute information that's accessible to the public for those who want to take the time to look at it, research it. You know, I have heard professionals in the media, at the highest levels in the media, really, perpetuate that myth that Joseph Attlee, the second highest paid politician now in Barbados, second only to the prime minister. I heard that coming from the mouth of a seasoned and experienced journalist, that he's now benefiting from $150,000, I've heard $300,000 subvention and all of that. Listen, Blaine and David, I have served my organization, the church in Barbados and across the region. I now happen to be leading that organization for the past 11 years or so. And it's never been about money. I have declined the salary from the church. My view has always been, I work, my wife works, and we do not need to depend upon a salary that comes out of the pockets of the people of the church. I used to say largely whom are poor, and I've come to discover that some of them are not so very poor, some of them are much better off than I am, in fact. Listen, I've never been driven by that. I left a job in 1987 to get involved in the political process in Barbados. I had served an international organization that had a hemispheric component here. It is a very large organization dealing in publication and translation of literature. And I headed the unit here in the Caribbean, being responsible for its work from Jamaica right down to Guyana and Suriname. I left that job as the head of that organization in 1999 without asking questionable pay to become a parliamentary secretary when Owen Arthur asked me. Parliamentary secretaries then were not paid very much at the time. I think that was subsequently changed. That was a position that gave me all kind of privilege, traveling the world, meeting people. I've traveled all over the world. But I left that to come to the business of public service. Now, ministers in Barbados, this amount is public knowledge. They get about $17,000 per month. That is cabinet ministers. A parliamentary secretary gets in total about $15,000. Both of them are paid at a higher level, obviously, than the leader of the opposition. The speaker of the House of Assembly in Barbados in all total gets about $14,500. That also is higher than the pay of the leader of the opposition. The leader of the opposition gets about $14,000 all total. That is basic salary plus allowances. The salary is $11,289 or something like that per month. Let me say this and make it abundantly clear. If I had stayed on the backbench of Barbados and accepted a backbencher's salary, so to speak, and worked accepting a pay from the church, or worked at another job as I have always done while serving the church, the remuneration I'd be getting monthly is to be compared with what I am now getting. If I had accepted a position, and I'm not talking about a cabinet position, a lesser position in the Parliament of Barbados, Deputy Speaker of the Parliament or Chairman of Committees of the Parliament, you could accept that, be paid. The Deputy Speaker gets $9,500 a month, all total. The Chairman of Committees gets $11,000 all total, salary and allowances. If I would have accepted any of those positions if they were offered, I could still work at a job and make more money all total that I'm working for right now. The Speaker of the Parliament of Barbados can still pursue his legal profession. The Chairman of Committees in the Parliament of Barbados can still work at her profession. I could have accepted any position offered in the Parliament of Barbados, apart from being a cabinet minister in the Motley administration, do that and still work out there and be earning more money than I'm now working. I'll probably have an easier time at the work. I have chosen to do this not so much because of anything that relates to self as it relates to public service and a sense of duty to the people of Barbados. That's where we are.
You want any follow-up?
Well, I want you to talk to us about this journey, therefore. Having made the switch to the opposition bench, coming up against the criticism which I hear often from the House of Assembly that, you know, you were one of us. You were committed to these ideals and these goals. How can you now come talking about criticizing these positions? What is the price that you have paid in all of this?
Whatever the price is that I must pay for the decision that I made, David, I'm willing to pay that price.
What is it?
I don't know what the price is. I suppose at the end of the day, we will get to be able to put some quantum to that, some sum to that, some total to that. I'll tell you this. There are those who can politically posture and say on a public microphone or from the positions in the House Assembly, you were part of this, you were... Hello, there was nowhere in the planning of the Barbados Labour Party policy program in preparation for election, nowhere to which I was any discussion to which I was party that suggested that bus fares in Barbados would have been raised from $1.50 to $3.50 or $2 to $3.50, whatever the movement. There was nowhere that was said. There was nowhere it was suggested that when we were in opposition as a party, we would criticize the Democratic Labour Party, the then administration, for the level of the taxation. And then we come into the office of government, and then we continue to increase the burden of taxes upon the people. Nothing like that was suggested. So it is all right to say you support these policies. And there are policies which are included in the Barbados Labour Party manifesto document and other documents, which I supported then and which I do support now. But as the implementation of some of these policies, when it comes down to specific initiatives, when it comes down to specificities about how you implement the policies and how it impacts people's lives, then there was nowhere in any discussion to which I was party in the Barbados Labour Party that you talked about laying off people. In fact, the Barbados Labour Party did not even fully commit before the election to going to the International Monetary Fund. There was a vague statement in relation to that which suggested that there was a chance or a possibility. I have not turned my back on anything I believed in then. What I'm saying is, and I said it from the beginning, when the government, in my view, gets it right, when the talk I hear out there on the streets, as I like to say, the top of Broad Street or the middle of Swan Street, when the talk out there supports what the government is doing in an honest way, I will stand up in the doors of Parliament and support that. When I think there's an alternative opinion that needs to be expressed, I will express that. When I think there are questions to be raised, I will raise those questions. There's nowhere in the plan of the Barbados Labour Party that we, having criticized the Democratic Labour Party for the large amount of monies that they expended on consultancy services and fees, there was no way in the discussions to which I was party, unless there were discussions that took place outside of me, and there were a lot of them. I wasn't involved in that many. There was nowhere that the Barbados Labour Party said, when we got into office, we will employ a core of consultants that will double or triple the amount of money that the former administration was spending on that. So it is over the specificities with respect to the policy positions that you implement. So I'm not changed. I get up in Parliament, you present a budget. You present a budget, and in the budget you include an increase in bus fares, which is enormous and will inflict serious pain upon people in Barbados. So I am opposed to that measure, the increase of bus fares at a time. But in the same budget, you're increasing public service salaries by 5% for the first time in 8 to 10 years. Now, here am I in a position, I will support the increase to public service. So I'm not going to vote against the budget, because to vote against the budget because of bus fares or any other item, to vote against that is to vote against a salary increase for public service. I've not changed my mouth about anything, Dave.
But you came in against the backdrop of knowing what the macroeconomic picture was. You certainly knew how difficult a job would be facing the government. This person online said, your job as opposition is to oppose everything she says and does. Another person says, he always has questions and implications. That's how he consistently rolls. Let's move on. Essentially, there are those who look at you and say, we don't expect anything else from somebody who sits as the opposition, because along with all of that, they also say this. And what is your plan? If you are so opposed to these specifics, what plan have you presented? What do you have?
David, we have laid out some initiatives already. There are others that we are working on and which will be amongst in due course.
You mean like going to China or the United Arab Emirates for help as opposed to going to the IMF?
Well, the point is an option that one might be considered, an option that one might be consider would be that you can go to the IMF. We have not totally opposed that. An option that you additionally could consider is sovereign debt assistance. There's nothing wrong with that. There are countries that do that, and there are countries which are willing to lend. The former administration, at least through one embodiment, a spokesman of theirs, made reference to help out of the United Arab Emirates. There's China. There are other sources of possible funding. We have not criticized a move to the IMF. What we have questioned is the extent to which we have committed ourselves onto that program. It is the most severe IMF program into which we have entered today.
But it assumes that there will be no commitment to the United Arab Emirates or China. There is that possibility that getting into bed with them also carries a price because of the difficulty, the magnitude of the difficulty.
Yes, it will always carry a price, and maybe you can get more concessionary funding, perhaps. And like I said, we have not criticized the government for going to the IMF. The extent to which we've committed ourselves on that program is the question that we have raised. You have agreed to a 6% primary surplus in the current context. You know the hardship that wreaks upon people of Barbados? Even now, we've reverted to a 1% primary surplus, and we applaud ourselves for having done that. But as a 1% primary surplus in a context in which revenues will be severely reduced, the 6% primary surplus is in the context of a $10 billion economy. You are looking now at reduced revenues because of the COVID situation, the problems even prior to the COVID situation, and you boast of having negotiated a position of 1% primary. Now you're telling us that the opportunity is there to go back and further renegotiate that. David, we don't only oppose for opposing sake. I don't hold the view that you should oppose for opposing sake, and that is in part perhaps why I attract some criticism. Because I'm on the other side, it does not mean that everything that comes from over there, I will oppose. If you take the most recent program, the Welcome Stamp program, I think the Welcome Stamp program largely is a good program. What I do oppose about that is that element of it that seems to, in an underhand way, in a stealth way, seems to want to introduce notions of family in Barbados with which we are not familiar and for which our law does not provide. So I can support the Welcome Stamp program while disagreeing with that element of it that addresses, that seeks to address that issue. And you speak on things like this. It is not because you are BLP and you're supporting the government, and it's not because you're opposition, so you're posing for posing's sake. I seek to find out that which I think is fair. What are people saying? How will this impact Barbados? What are the implications down the road for aspects of life in Barbados? And I come down on that view after discussions within my group. So when you come with a Welcome Stamp program, and I have to tell you, David, because the people of Barbados sometimes are not aware fully of what is happening. Even that specific measure, when brought to the Parliament of Barbados, you know, the night before, when it was made, when I was made aware the night before, by the government that we will be discussing that next morning in Parliament, I prepared to discuss that bill that I had before me that night. And I came to Parliament next morning, and it was by chance, perhaps, when a copy of the bill was given to me, I looked at it. There was really no need, perhaps, for me to look at it, essentially, because I had reviewed it and gone over it the night before. But I looked at it, David, and there's that significant change in the bill that addresses this matter of partners and that type of stuff. Uh-huh. I'm saying to you, when I see that, I have to question the government as to why this would happen. Why would I get one copy of a bill the night before and notice that we're going to discuss it the next day? And when I come next morning, a copy of a bill is put before me. Nobody indicates to me there is a change in it. It is only by perusing it that I notice there is a change.
No.
No.
Bishop Atherley, one more question for me before I go back to Glenn, because I think this is quite pertinent to what you said earlier about your commitment to service and that sort of thing. In July last year, you were quoted as saying, if you appoint 26 people to a cabinet out of 30, and then you make another one the speaker, another one the deputy speaker, and another one the chairman of committees, and you look at Joseph Atherley, who has served as a parliamentary secretary, who has served in the cabinet of Barbados, in the office of the prime minister, who has represented this country at home and abroad, something is wrong. And the thrust of the story was that you said during the first political meeting of the People's Party for Democracy and Development, Atherley accused Prime Minister Mia Motley of implicitly suggesting that he was not valued as a sitting member of the ruling party. It gives the impression that you were aggrieved, that you were angry, and that is why you left.
It was not a sense of being aggrieved, David. I thank you for that question. And I think it is a deserving question. It was not a question of being aggrieved. It's a question of having a heightened sense of confirmation of what I have felt and known for a long time. David, you would not know it. People of Bar, I have had some heated run-ins with the prime minister before she was prime minister, while she was leader of the opposition, and prior to her being leader of the opposition. And if you want to explore any of that, I'm prepared to talk about these things, because there are people who were privy to these things. They weren't things held and done or occurring in secret. These happened before audience, before the full glare and view of cabinet and stuff like that. And I've had some run-ins with Ms. Motley. It is no secret within the bosom of the Barbados Labour Party that the current prime minister, even before she became prime minister, did not want Joseph Atherley to run in an election in 2008. She did not want Joseph Atherley to run an election in 2013. And were she to have had the opportunity to have stopped me from running in 2018, there are those on the other side, people in positions of knowledge and influence, who would tell you she probably would have stopped me. But my nomination before she came back to the office of leadership of the party had taken place. So there's a history with me and the prime minister. So if you don't want me to run in an election, and there's some things that took place in the last campaign that I really would not perhaps even want to mention, it is... David, it became a matter of surprise to the leader of the political party, an astute politician such as Ms. Motley, that 2 days before an election, it became apparent to her that no political meeting had been held in the St. Michael West constituency. That is when that became apparent to her. Everybody else knew that it did not happen. But I am saying to you, David, that there's a history between me and Ms. Motley, which suggested that her preference would be for me not to have been a candidate in the Barbados Labour Party. There's some other instances, like I said, where we had heated disagreements, believe me, and I don't overstate that, which would suggest that I would not have been Ms. Motley's preferred cup of tea. So I did not expect to be in her cabinet. Those who labored with me in St. Michael West, my campaign team, could tell you, I said to them repeatedly, if you are with me in this because you anticipate when this election is over, if I win, that I'm going to be in the cabinet and you might get a job, you might get help, you must disabuse your minds of that. I will not be in Ms. Motley's cabinet. There are those who sit now on the other side, David, as ministers in the government, members of parliament, who would tell you that even during the election campaign, I said to them, I know if I win my seat, I am not going to be in your cabinet in the Barbados Labour Party. So it was not a sense of being aggrieved, David. It was a sense of confirmation, because I anticipated, having criticized the Democratic Labour Party for a cabinet of 17 persons, that when Ms. Motley chose her cabinet, it would have been a cabinet of 17 persons or fewer, maybe 15 or so. I anticipated that. Now, when you go in a context like that, considering all that I know and all that I have experienced, and you appoint a cabinet of 26 persons, and Joseph Atherley is not included, and all kinds of new people are included, and some who are very subject to question in terms of the capacity they bring to the table. And I'm just expressing the opinion from there, not expressing a personal view here or a critique of them. When you do that, you are confirming for me what you have signaled all along, what I have known all along. And therefore, it cannot be that the role I must best play for Barbados, it is to sit in the back bench of a cabinet of 26 persons who come with an opinion strongly formed at Bay Street, impose it upon the Parliament of Barbados, and all I am there to do is to sing in the choir and say, yes, Lord. No. I have come to public life to serve other than that. It's not a sense of being aggrieved, David. It's a question of it being confirmed in my mind if I needed further confirmation that my value was not appreciated over there. That was not the principal motivator, however. Principal motivator is the vacuum in the democracy, the democratic structure or architecture of the Barbados, especially in the Parliament. That's the principal motivator.
We'll take a break here for comments of Williams Industries Incorporated, sponsors of today's Getting Out of Brass Tacks, Sunday Brass Tacks. And after we come back, I'll explore some more of the relationship between Bishop, the leader of the opposition, and the government and the Prime Minister.
Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board, and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing. Big or small, Evelyn's Metals, we have it
all. Evelyn's Metals, we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome to Brass Tacks Sunday with our special guest being Bishop Joseph Ivey, the leader of the opposition, and I'm joined interviewing him with my colleague David Ellis of Starcom Network fame. Before I ask my question about the ongoing relationship between Bishop Athley and the government and the Prime Minister, I think it's an opportune time if we can take a few calls and see what the public response has been, what questions they have been for Bishop Athley, and then we'll take it from there. Can we have our first caller, please?
Yes, good morning. Good morning. Now, let me thank Mr. Ellis for that probe. Because that probe just delivered self. Mr. Ali has declared exactly what most Barbadians felt about him. That's a self-revelation there. He just revealed everything. Now, I would like to say up front, Mr. Ali is not a defender of democracy, right? I will consider, or it's my opinion, it's all about a political, political thing that he made, right? He also said that earlier that Barbadians are not aware of certain things. But listening to him, he too is not aware of a lot of things happening in the country. Like he talked about the bus fares. If he was in the know-how, the last administration signed on with the IMF to raise bus fares in Barbados to $5.50. Right? That's what the last administration had done. I heard him said.
What is the basis of that assertion, Statsman?
What is the basis of the assertion? What assertion? That's not assertion.
That the last government signed on for $5 bus fares.
No, $5.50. No, he's saying that the bus fare, that the BLP did not, the BLP policies wasn't about discussion about $3 raising bus fares. But I'm saying even with the raising the bus fare to $3, the last administration had signed on. Right?
What is the source of your assertion, your claim?
The last meeting that you had, the transport board, Miss Felicia Sue, she reported that in the Parliament. Okay? She said that in the Weller Parliament. It is about me for you to question, you know. I don't really want you to necessarily grill me. Allow me the few minutes I have make my assertions about him.
Three is a lot. Three is a lot. You have Mr. Bishop Atherley here. I think you should spend the time to put a question to him. Rather than, well, you know, but seriously, if you come and you make these allegations against the man, that's a fact. No, dear.
That's a fact.
If you make the allegations, you're going to be expected to produce. No, that's not where you began.
But I told him.
Statsman, that's not where you began. You began earlier, and up to now, you have provided no foundation for the assessment that you've given.
Ms. Sue gave that assessment for a report from the transport board and the relevant house.
What is the thrust of what you want to say?
The thing that I'm saying that he's not aware of what's happening around him. He accused that Barbadians that aren't aware of it. And also I heard him said already that Miss Motley, the BLT went to the IMF for a 4-year, he said a sharp 4-year program. And this is the third time Barbadians went to the IMF. And this is the longest time that they went. The other two occasions they went for 2 years under Mr. Tom Adams and under 3 years for Mr. Sandy Ford. So saying that this is a sharp thing, that is far from the truth. And he said that Barbadians are poor for it. Before any evidence, right? Now, he must tell us what's happened to he and his senators, that they are not seeing eye to eye on several of the things that he brought up. Like the mandatory death sentence, he voted for it in the parliament. His senator voted against it. But the boss program, he said it was a salary cut. The next day, Senator Franklin came on and said it is not a salary cut. The last one, when we had the integrity legislation bill, he voted for it in the parliament, and his two senators spoke against it as they exit the Senate. So I'm saying to you, there are several things. No, he just actually tell the Barbadians that he has a feud with Miss Motley. He actually basically said it in different words, right? You understand what I'm saying? So, you, Mr. Ellis, when you interview Miss Motley in her first interview, you put the question to the Prime Minister, what about the crossing of the four by Mr. Avery? And Miss Motley said, the need to bring legislation to stop this floor crosses. And she said, what was put to Mr. Azali did not fill his eye. So it's crystal clear. He's upset that he did not get a ministerial post.
Okay. I think what he has basically said is that there is a history of a rather tense relationship between himself and Prime Minister Motley. And I mean, that is what he's put here on the table. But Bishop Atherley, out of all that has been said by this caller, the apparent difference between positions that you hold in the lower house and positions taken by your two representatives in the upper house, they loom large. The suggestion that the right hand does not appear to know what the left hand is doing. How do you respond to that?
Let me say, David and Glenn, I take the view that Caswell Franklin, Senator Franklin, is the foremost authority on the matters under his purview when they come to the Senate. That's the new industrial relations. That is also in the first place because I knew him strong. He's good on legislation. As well. I am one person in the lower house against 28. He's one of two in 21 and sometimes can find support among the independent senators as well. Senator Drakes is a well-researched, brilliant young mind who will serve this country well if given the opportunity. And I said to both of them from the beginning, look, there are some matters on which you must feel that you do not have to toe the line I take up there in the lower house. When they were appointed, there was no such thing as a PDP. And they were speaking as an opposition unit in the Senate to present an alternative opinion to that given by the government when required, and to be supportive of the government with scrutiny when that was justified.
When they spoke on the integrity legislation, there was a PDP, though.
Well, fine. And Caswell Franklin's position on the integrity legislation does not differ from mine. David, integrity legislation came to the Parliament of Barbados in July of 2018. That's when the bill was first introduced. You can go and check the records. I can send you a copy of the speech I made. It's about 45 minutes long. If you got the time, you can sit and listen. Or I can get you a printed copy and you can go over it. In that debate on the integrity in public life, I said we needed that. We were monkeying around with that for too long. I said way back in July of 2018 when it first came that I wasn't really persuaded that the government really wanted to have this legislation passed. I expressed the view then that I was convinced that the Attorney General wanted to have this legislation, and there was one other person of whom I was fully aware wanted to have this legislation, but that other elements in the leadership of the Barbados Labour Party did not want integrity in public life legislation, but we needed to stop monkeying around. Efforts had been made before. Bills had come and we had gotten nowhere with it. And it was a promise that the party now in office of government had made to the people of Barbados. Listen, I question the omission of judges. I question the composition of the Integrity Commission. I question the power being given to the Prime Minister under that legislation.
And you voted for it.
Yes, I question the matter of blind trust. David, no vote was taken on the matter in July, as far as I recall, of 2018. The matter went to a select committee. The matter has been in abeyance, so to speak, or before select committee ever since then until recently. I was a member of that committee. Voice those objections and raise those questions as well. The matter of confidentiality, all of these things are matters that Senator Franklin spoke about and others in the Senate spoke about expressing concern. Here's the difference, perhaps, David. Despite these things, I am willing to support the government's effort if it wants to bring integrity in public life legislation. Notwithstanding, I have said then, back then, check the record, I don't think they really want to bring it. David, I am not going to facilitate them by voting against it. But no vote was brought. It went to the select committee. I was a member of that select committee, repeated some of these concerns. The report came back to the parliament, was discussed briefly one day. And in the last instance, when it came to the parliament, the prime minister, having not contributed to debate on the bill previously, rose to speak. I thought the Prime Minister was going to make a contribution and then others would be allowed to add to the debate. I was shocked when the Prime Minister said that she was in fact wrapping up the debate and a vote was called for. I raised simply to say, I do not feel comfortable voting on this matter in this way. It is a long report that has come back from the committee, and though it has been in abeyance, there has been very little notice given that we will be debating it here today. And I think we should step back, just take a while, see if we can get it right in terms of the amendments that are in it, etc. But I was not going to vote against it, David, having said that I do not believe the government wants to pass it. I voted for it despite its deficiencies. It went to the Senate, and I understood that. It would go there with my full knowledge that the Senate had the capacity to block it if they wanted to, if the votes could be occasioned from the government side. And that is what happened. Now, Caswell Franklin, Senator Drakes might seem to be at a different perspective sometimes from where I am. It is because we do not mimic the Barbados Labour Party. I don't think we have to come to the Parliament of Barbados and everybody sings the same notes from the same choir sheet all of the time. Senator Franklin often speaks as a trade unionist and a trade union leader in Parliament and outside of Parliament. He speaks from that perspective. And I understand where he's coming from because I've mandated him to champion workers' rights for us in the Senate of Barbados. This is right up his street. And I just want to disabuse people's minds of any view that we live in two different camps. Trust me, we don't. There's more of a division on the other side, even though in public, they all seem to sing from the same notes.